right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get started here, and it's going to go quick today. We're doing 1 hour with Pittsburgh Power. Looks like we've got lots of questions already on hold, so we're going to get right to it.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers. The list goes on and on. If you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call. We'll tackle it here on this show. We're going to get to the calls. Today is the Power Hour. Joining me from Pittsburgh Power, Ethan and John. Welcome back, guys.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin. Good to be back.
Yeah, great to have you here. I know Bruce has been absent, but we're looking forward to getting him back next week, I think. What's new and exciting over at Pittsburgh Power these days?
Not a whole lot right now. We've been prepping for the Mid-America Trucking Show and some prep work also for the CMC right now. And usual stuff in the shop. A couple interesting problems. We had two smoking Detroits that I think we got figured out. One of them was an interesting problem. We had some fuel tanks that were heavily coated in asphaltine, and a guy had a smoke issue that wouldn't go away. And we thought, well, before we do anything else, let's get those tanks cleaned out. So I found a local friend of mine actually has got a cleaning service, and he figured out a way to get the tanks like spotless inside. And we put them back on and put fresh fuel in it, and all of a sudden it didn't smoke anymore, which I thought was interesting. So he'd been trying to treat the stuff out of there for over a year, and he's not gotten rid of it, and his smoke issue had gotten worse and worse. And so, you know, we were figuring on doing other work, but once we cleaned the tanks and put them back on and put the clean fuel in, it was fine. So a little food for thought there. So
yeah. But, interesting. Go ahead. So real quick, let me jump in there. How did they clean the tanks? What was the procedure?
The guy is really a fanatic about making things clean. So he took it as a challenge when we sent him the first set, and he found a chemical that did it. He wouldn't tell him exactly what it was.
Okay.
He made some wands for a steam cleaner, and he said it was the chemical that really did it. He said, I couldn't get everything that I wanted to with the wands that he'd made to get in there with the steam cleaner. So he experimented with some stuff, and I don't know what it was, but they come back looking like new inside. We've sent them two sets now that look like they had a coating of tar on the inside of them, and they come back looking like new.
Wow, I love that. And the reason I ask is because I get that question here a lot. People go through the same thing. You know, there's a product called asphaltine that's supposed to clean this stuff up, but if it gets really bad, it doesn't touch it inside the tank. And I've just had people ask me, you know, how do I get the tanks clean? And I haven't had a really good answer. So now my answer is just get to you guys.
Yeah, send them over. We've got, he turns them around in about a day. Some are more labor intensive than others to get off, obviously, but we've got it down pretty good, and it works out really well. It's not terribly expensive. It was came out to around $200 a tank to do it, which I thought was reasonable. And usually takes us about 10 hours to R&R the tanks.
Well, you know, that is very reasonable, because many times when we get a problem that bad, I've seen people spend more than that on additives and headaches and downtime and all kinds of other stuff going on. So that's good to know that, you know, they got clean, it took care of the smoke. You know, I don't see a lot of asphaltine on the Detroits. I tend to see it a lot on the ISX.
Either of them will do it. Actually, both of the ones that we just did were Detroits. And the you understand the ISX, and the chemical phenomenon that happens there is a function of pressure and heat on the fuel, and it creates a polymer that we're calling asphaltene that actually coats the inside of the tank. So it's an interesting problem, and you know, something that was new to me. You know, I've only been here for a few months again now, and seemed to be, you know, something that we need to find a solution for, and I believe that we have. Like I said, it's semi-labor intensive, but worthwhile. The fellow who just left said he spent more than that on additives over the last year trying to get rid of it. So,
exactly, yeah. So you said there was another one too. What was that?
They were both Detroits. There were two of them that we've done.
Oh, both asphaltene problems. Okay.
Yes, they were. Yeah.
Huh.
The other smoker. That one was. We actually ended up going to a higher compression piston in an engine that we'd been struggling with the smoke issue with, and it had a whole litany of problems with it that we believe we've got sorted out. So that was the other smoke issue. Some of these Series 60 12.7s, DDEC 3s, come with a 15-to-1 compression as opposed to the 16.5. And I think if you're in a nice warm climate somewhere, you're not going to notice it, but in the cold, that 15-to-1 seems to be a little on the low side to run clean.
Got it. Interesting stuff. It's great what you guys are doing there as far as this really detailed troubleshooting. You know, lots of trucks are going down the road. They're just not going down the road very well. And, you know, you can get by. And fuel economy usually suffers, performance suffers, maintenance costs go up over time, you have more downtime. And nobody really seems to be able to figure out some of these things. So I look forward to this day every week, because it seems like every week there's another little problem solved or a little tweak made here and there, and I love that stuff.
We've got one here right now that I can maybe ask you about. We've got a Schneider glider in here that a owner-operator bought used, and is unhappy with the fuel mileage. And so far, we've not found a smoking gun in that regard. He's getting 6.5, which, you know, I've heard of a lot worse. And he'd like to do more. And, you know, no boost leaks, fuel pressure is good, no air, dyno's well. And so we're looking for places to turn on that. I'm not sure where we're going to go with that one yet, but I'm sure hopefully we'll figure something out. If you've got any ideas, I'd like to
hear. Do you know how he's tracking his fuel mileage?
I do not know. I've not had that discussion with him yet.
One of the things, we have our, you know, our online software that we've got, you know, many, many thousands of trucks on there that track their fuel mileage on there. And the cool thing there is, if they're using our fuel gauges software, any of us could go in and look at all of their history. So
I'm already tracking some of our customers on there. I'm using
excellent.
It personally to track some of our customers, yeah. So.
Oh, fantastic. Well, then you know that, you know, if I can go in and see the history, sometimes the average doesn't tell us the whole story. The average could be 6.5, but we also, if you notice on the main screen where you land and look at fuel economy for a truck, we highlight average and high and low. And a lot of times I'll look at that range. And if that range is really big, you know, maybe his low has been down as bad as like 4.3, but his high has been up around 7, you know, and a half, maybe even higher. And if we have that really big range, I almost always find that it is going to be a mechanical problem. If it's really consistent, right around the average, like the average is 6.5 and the low is 5.9 and the high is 7.1, that's a really tight range. That usually tells us that mechanically it's probably in pretty good shape, but we could be looking at a bunch of little cumulative problems, like maybe he's got really high rolling resistant tires. Maybe he's pulling a container with rib sides. And so we start looking at more operational stuff. What we find when there's a mechanical problem, the truck seems to do much better when it's light. But when you put a real load on the engine, that's when the fuel economy drops way off. So one of the first things I do is try to get a history and look at every tank and see if anything jumps out.
I'll start doing that. Yeah, they'll start using the tool more often. We had a couple of customers came in and asked me to start tracking them. Said, hey, you know, look me up on on the Gauges app, and yes, I've been doing that. It's kind of fun, actually.
Yeah, we love that. We've solved some problems here right on the air, because I'll go in and look, and we'll see, you know, that here is when the fuel economy drops way off, and it's, you know, either really heavy loads or, you know, a lot more pulling and climbing. And usually that at least gets us in the right direction. We can start looking. One of the things, you know, we'll talk about this now, and we'll talk about it more at the CMC. I want to get you guys more involved in our fuel mileage makeover. And what we do there, the primary goal of it is just to take a truck and figure out every possible way we can improve fuel economy. So it's a program that we do. We're totally sold out again this year on it. We can only do so many because they're kind of labor intensive. But the truck pulls in and we do a full visual inspection front to back. We make notes about all the aerodynamic stuff that maybe could be fixed or improved. We pull oil samples. We test the charge air cooler. A lot of the same stuff you guys would do. But then we list all the specs. We list all the modifications. And, well, I'm going to get to a break. We'll come right back and we'll finish up what that is. And then we'll jump into some phone calls. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. It's the Power Hour. With me today, Ethan and John. We're talking about fuel mileage right now and our fuel mileage makeover. So, guys, the once we get all the information, specs, modifications, you know, we even check, you know, tires and tread depth, and we list everything out, and then we kind of have a team, and we just go through it from front to back. What are all the possibilities that we could do to improve this? Upgrades, modifications, fixes. And then we kind of prioritize them in order of what we think the best return is going to be. So it we've been kind of doing that for a couple decades now, but this formalizes it. It's a program. It's documented. And I can't think of anybody better who could do this than you guys.
Well, that sounds like fun, actually. I look forward to that.
Yeah, so when we get to the CMC this year, we'll show you, you know, the whole program and how we do it. The interesting thing, last year was the first time we did it at the CMC, and we sold out. And when I started looking at, as the paperwork started to come in and I started looking at it, I had a moment of panic, because about 75% of the people who signed up were already at 8-plus miles to the gallon. It was, you know, I was thinking we were going to get trucks at 5.5 and 6, and getting 10 or 15 or even 20% improvement would have been a slam dunk. You get somebody in at 8.3 and try to get them 10%, it's difficult. But it was
tough.
Challenging, and it was fun. And the interesting thing was we did improve a lot of those trucks.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, it was fun. So we'll talk more about that when we get to the CMC this year. We're going to get to some phone calls. Let's go to Indianapolis. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good.
Good today.
Good. What's your mind today?
Oh, glad to hear. Just had sent in an oil sample for you to look at, Kevin.
I've got it here, and I've got one question. Do you have a bypass filter on this truck?
I do have a bypass filter. The previous owner of the truck had run AMSOIL and had an AMSOIL bypass filter on here. Unfortunately, when he had the turbo replaced in 2013, for some reason, he had it unhooked. I've been trying to get my mechanic to hook it back up, but I'm going to go ahead and upgrade to an OPS with the great special that you guys are running for the show coming up. So I'm just going to go ahead and upgrade that, get rid of this AMSOIL one.
Got it. Okay. So, and that kind of tells me, I think all that really happened on this sample, I just think you went too long, 36,000 miles without that bypass filter hooked up, and everything went up. But I don't, it's always difficult when you do a really extended drain like this to know whether it's probably just the extended drain that caused it. Aluminum went up and iron went up, so we do worry a little bit about cylinders, pistons, those kind of things. We've got a climb in potassium, but not really in sodium. So, well, sodium went up a little bit. Too early to call whether or not, you know, it could be a coolant leak. I'm showing 1.3 million. Is that original, or has there been an in-frame at some point?
No, sir. Apparently, this is always a Landstar truck, and the original owner had a head gasket done at 100,000 miles, and then the second owner, the previous owner of the truck, picked it up, and it's all original ever since. And now it's at 1,335,000. Still pulls like a champ. It's a ISX 475, 2005 model, and no smoke. Just my fuel gauges right now with the winter blend, I'm averaging 7.4, and runs like a champ, man. I think this engine needs to be studied because I don't know if it's just being held together with the hope and a dream or what.
Well, I'll tell you that.
You might have had some more frequent oil changes then.
Yeah,
that's
well,
right.
The oil samples have looked so good. They said go up to 25,000, then they said go up to 30,000. And
that,
I said, okay, well,
who said that?
The guys at Blackstone. They said, you know, you can go ahead and try to go up to 30,000 on the last one, and it came back, and everything looked pretty good on it. And I'm running the Rotella T6 synthetic, the 5W40, like you recommended, and you know, like I said, it's running like a champ, no smoke, and burning about a gallon every 8 to 10,000 right now.
Well, it's clearly a strong engine. It is amazing. For an 05 ISX, we almost never see that kind of mileage, and it still seems solid. But I would get the OPS on there, and even with the OPS, I would keep your drain intervals to 25,000, or your filter change and samples to 25,000. I wouldn't extend any further than that.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I'll go ahead and take care of that. I sure do appreciate y'all's time and the good advice. And like I said, I'll be going ahead and placing that order because that's a great deal. And with getting the filters and the oil samples included in the package, I'll be saving a lot of money. So like I said, looking forward to it.
Yeah, great results on an ISX. I would just, you know, I'm a fan of extended drains, but within reason. And I almost never extend drains without a bypass filter. So let's go to Pennsylvania. George, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What
good.
Can we help you with today?
Hey, I got a 2009 ISX, the P386. It's been deleted, and I've given up on this truck, and I've got issues with it. It's got a vibration, and I'm averaging about around 5.5 miles a gallon, maybe 6 if I'm on flat ground and not too heavy. It's got 750 horsepower programmed into it, supposedly. And the truck has more issues than I want to deal with, and I want to know what I should do about another truck. And my heart's been kind of set on a Fitzhugh glider for a while now.
So let me, I'll jump in with my opinion, and then John, Ethan, you guys can jump in. Here's what I think you should do with the truck you have now. The next time you're near a major city, find the worst neighborhood you can, park it, leave it running with the door open, and grab a cab, and then start shopping for the next truck.
Why do you think I took a load to Miami last week?
Yeah, leave it
in
Miami. It'll be in
ago.
South America before the week's over.
Oh, man. I talked to you a couple months ago, and I had about $30,000 into it. I asked you about my front suspension and a bad ride with an alignment and all that. I'm up to about $40,000 now in a year. And the way I see it, is, I mean, it's kind of destroyed me financially over the last year. I've had the truck for years, my first truck. I wanted to do this right and be successful, and I have to get out of it, but this thing is eating me to pieces. I got $2,300. I still owe my mechanic now, who I'm really not pleased with, and I just made too many mistakes, and I want to wash myself of it. And my, if you were going to pick a truck, what would you go with? And I've been kind of set on a T660 with a 12.7, a fifth-wheel glider, and
Hold on. Sometimes when we get ourselves in a hole, the last thing we want to do is keep digging. Sometimes we need a short-term fix to make sure we don't crash and burn. You have had a rough year. $40,000 on a truck is insane. And we want to get you financially stable again before we go buy your dream truck. I'll tell you what I'd be looking for right now would be a late 90s Volvo with a Series 60 or a late 90s FLD with a Series 60. If you happen to find a T600, it'd be wonderful. They're a little more rare. But I would be looking at late 90s trucks for $10,000 to $15,000. Get into it, get a year or two. They're about the lowest risk truck you can buy right now. Worst case scenario, you drop an engine, and we could still get away cheaper than what you just spent on this truck, and then we'd have a truck that would last us for 5 or 6 years. So right now we want to do something really low risk. We want to get you in a truck that can make a lot of money and doesn't have a lot of potential downside. And just a year or two, get some savings built back up, and in that time start planning your dream truck. That's what I'd be looking for.
Okay, and I have one other question for you, if you don't mind. I'm leased to a guy that's got a few, he's got two or three of his own trucks, a handful of us leased to him, and we're pulling for a guy out of Southwest Michigan, and I'm at 80% of gross, and I don't have any obligations of the trailer other than paying for reefer fuel. And I'm making decent money, about $4,500 to $6,000, you know, between working 6 to 8 days out and then a couple days at home. So I don't think I'm doing too bad financially-wise. But eventually I'd like to get my own trailer, my own authority, and do something different. And I want to know what you think about that.
I think it's a great goal. I think, again, we've got to get you financially stable first. You're in your first year. Things have been kind of rough. I would not... Moving away from a carrier to another carrier can cost anywhere between $5,000 and $10,000 in total cost. Moving from a carrier to get your own authority will cost at least $10,000. And I just think we've got to get you financially stable before we make any of those big changes like that. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. It is the Power Hour. John and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power are with me today. Hey, John, Ethan, I've got a question for you guys. Can't believe I didn't think to ask this sooner. You know, I keep saying I want that 6NZ you've got sitting on the floor there to put in my coach, but I have an easier solution to my problem, maybe. You guys have a power box for an 07 C13?
Is 07, it's not the A-cert, is it there?
It is an A-cert, yeah, C13.
Okay, I believe we do. Yeah, I believe we do on that one. Because they're they're pretty much the same, just a smaller, you know, displacement.
And we've got it for the C15, I know, and it works quite well.
So I'm officially placing my order then. Bring one to the CMC.
We'll have one with us at least.
Yeah.
I'll confirm that
it
works
bring
with
one.
The C13 and, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, we've got the 45-foot coach. We got a 24-foot car hauler, and we're pretty heavy. We've got a full-size car in there and all the stuff we're taking to the CMC, and I'm getting a little bored at 36 miles an hour up the hills.
We'll just need to make up a nice long cable for you, huh,
yeah.
For coach?
That's right.
All right, let's work on a – we
yeah.
need an extra long control cable for you.
Yeah, that won't be
there
an issue.
You go.
We could do that. Yeah, we'll work on that for
perfect.
You, Kevin, no problem. You like it installed
perfect.
There?
Perfect. Yes, that would be wonderful.
Bruce once took me to a big RV rally in Quartzsite, Arizona in the early 2000s, I think, or maybe even like 99, and he was in there working the show and selling stuff like crazy, and he had me set up in a tent outside. I was like literally banging exhaust manifolds off of turbos and installing gauges and climbing around under people's beds and coaches for a week solid in the middle of the desert. Well, he was out in the, over in the show being the salesman that he is. And, yeah, hardest I ever worked in my life, so.
I'll bet. I'll tell you, though,
hey,
January
come
and February.
With me for a week. It'll be fun.
Right, so. Yeah. January and February in Quartzsite is one of my favorite places in an RV. You just pull out into the middle of the desert and park wherever you want. The weather's beautiful, and it's kind of an interesting place. During the summer, I don't know, they've got, like, 5,000 residents, I think. It's not a very big place. One exit off the interstate there, maybe two. But I think I read somewhere that throughout the winter months, they get over 1 million RVs through there. It's some crazy number.
For that convention, and it was just a sea of RVs. Have you ever been there for that? It's insane. There are like 50,000 RVs parked in the desert right there. It's nuts.
Yeah, it is. It's a crazy place. We were actually planning on spending a couple days. I mean, we're kind of heading down that way now. And if we get some time, I'll just go down there and park in the desert for a couple nights. It's just really fun out there.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. Unless you're changing
right,
exhaust valves on turbos all day.
That's right. That would be a little different. Let's go to Nebraska. Brad, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I have got a 2003 Volvo 770 with an ISX. It's all pre-EGR. Both the truck and the engine were built early 2002, so it's a Gen 1 body and all that. What I was wondering about, it's got 770,000 miles on it. It's fairly new to me. I've only been running it about 6 weeks. I put about 22,000 miles on it. And I'm wondering, I don't know anything about the maintenance history. I've had to replace oil coolers and both fuel pumps, but what I'm wondering about is when or if, how do I know if I need an overhead done?
Well, in that case, since you don't know the history, it's never a bad idea just to get one run on it. This way, therefore, you know when it was done and that it's set, and you don't have to anything to worry about there, because you really won't want to guess on that for too much. Because there's always a chance the person before you never did it.
Right.
And I've seen
right.
what happens when you neglect to do them, because eventually it'll throw a valve somewhere where it don't belong.
And
okay.
The ISXs in particular, I don't know if it's the hardness of the cams or what, but they tend to go through cams and rollers too. So it's worth looking inside of there, every 100,000 or so. So I would do
okay.
it as a baseline right now and then
I mean,
look at every 100,000 after that.
Okay, because it seems to run very strong. I don't have any problems with it running. Now, it doesn't get much as far as fuel mileage. I'm around 6 in the 6 weeks I've been running it. You know, 597 to 604 is about where I'm at. So, but I've got miserable tires on it. I've got, you know, old heavy-duty snow tires is what's on the rear of this. So I know a lot of this can be fixed.
We're all three in agreement, because I would say the exact same thing. When we don't know when it's done, just do one. Again, especially on the ISX, to get into the top end and see what things look like. I'll tell you something else, that if you don't know the history and you bought the truck around 600,000 or 700,000 miles, I can almost guarantee what else didn't get done, and it should have, was transmission and differential oil change at 500,000. It's very,
yeah, that's
very
my
common.
Next step, actually.
Yeah.
I just did my first oil
really,
change, and then in the next 2 weeks, I plan to do both of those. So,
yeah, it's a really common thing. People have a life cycle where they keep a truck 600,000, 700,000, 800,000 miles, and they know if they don't do the fluid change at 500,000, it's probably never going to cause them a problem because they're going to get rid
right.
of it. It's the
right.
next owner who assumes that it did get done, that at 850 or 9, you start losing differentials and transmissions. So I would get that on
okay.
the list.
Okay. That's what I will do.
Sounds All right.
good.
Let's head off
All right.
to Pennsylvania. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hey, Yins, guys, got one question for you. Permanis or a Hoagie? Which one is it?
Permanis for me.
Permanis.
I'll definitely
there
you
That's
go.
Right, me too.
See, now I'm all
Permanis. Yep. Hey, I'm one of the...
Permanis and an Iron City Barrier set.
That's right.
Oh, boy.
I'm one of the guinea pigs out here with Cascadia with the DD15 and this new power box that you guys are experimenting with. And
oh, okay.
I'm on my first heavy load. I'm at 79,000, going down 70. I don't know if you guys have ever gone down 70 towards Baltimore, but man, it was beautiful. I had to drop one gear and on the number 4 setting and pulled the hill without any problems. And I've noticed that my engine doesn't get hot as fast when I'm pulling the hills. I guess that's because of the increased fuel and everything.
Well, it's got enough fuel to make some boost now. So it's actually spinning the
turbo
a little bit better than it was before.
And it keeps everything a little bit cooler. I think whenever you guys put these on the market, I think that there's going to be a lot of sales because it's easy to put on. And it's easy to see results. One thing that I want to see over the next couple months is, a long time ago, Kevin talked about, you know, your low end of your fuel usage and then the high end. Everybody always talks about the best fuel mileage that you get. But what about on those really bad loads that are on those really hard roads to take? How low is my fuel going to drop? And I'm hoping that the Pittsburgh Power will improve that and close that gap between, you know, your low and your high, because that's where your average is going to actually come up. And, you know, that's
a really good point, and we don't talk about it a lot. You know, everybody loves to see that big number. What's the best fuel economy I got? We always try to improve that. But if we work on the worst, if we figure out why we get those 5.2 tanks and we can bring that up, that brings the average up. That actually saves us more money than improving on the top end. So
it's
a lot of people don't think that way. And the performance modifications tend to improve the bottom, the worst fuel tanks, better, more so than the top. So that's a great way of looking at this.
Yeah, one of the things, I'm at like 8.02 for lifetime on this thing, and I have the low rolling resistance tires. And the only other thing that I've done before the Pittsburgh Power Box is the air tabs. And, you know, a buddy of mine put the fast fuel system on, and he saw a half a mile per gallon improvement over the past year. And I think one thing you might be missing is 2 or 3% at 6 miles per gallon is not a lot, but 2 or 3% at 7.9 or 8 miles per gallon is a lot of an improvement. So when you're starting to talk about those higher end trucks that are already getting 8, you're going to see a much better improvement with all these upgrades.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, good stuff. There's the music. We've got to get to a break. We're going to come right back. We've got one more segment. We're going to knock out as many phone calls as we can. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. Ethan and John from Pittsburgh Power are with me. We're going to get back to some phone calls real quick. Hey guys, I do this every week. We run right down to the final couple minutes trying to get in as many calls as we can. We never get to them all. There's all kinds of questions for you guys. So if they don't get to you here on the air, how can they get a hold of you?
Call or email is the best way. Just give us a ring at 724-360-4080. That's the main line in here. And if you'd like to send me an email, it's John, J-O-H-N, at PittsburghPower.com. And don't forget the H in Pittsburgh. So that's a good way to get to me as well.
Perfect. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to North Carolina. Eric, welcome to the program.
Hey guys, I got a question for Pittsburgh Power.
Sure.
Do you guys have turbos for a Acer engine C15? It's 05.
The only thing we would be able to get for that one would be the stock replacements there.
Okay. All right, and one more question with the power box. How many horsepower did that put to this engine?
Well, total or per level? Per level, it's 30 horsepower and 75 foot-pounds of torque.
Okay.
So there's seven levels, and I don't thought my head
okay.
was thinking of the max on that one, but it brings the Acer to life. They're notoriously, you know, sluggish, especially on takeoff.
Yes.
And you can even feel it on the dyno if you just roll into the throttle. It takes it a little while for it to respond. The power boxes bring that to life.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thanks,
you'll definitely feel a response, you know, improvement.
Well, that
okay. All
that's
right.
an extra 210 horsepower.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. We're going to head off to. Now we're going to stay right there in North Carolina. We're going to talk to Robert this time. Robert, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, Kevin. I got a question you probably ain't going to like. I need to get a new truck, and I have a California, well, not all California, but largely California operation dry van, half heavy loads, half light loads. And I was wondering, I know you don't like new trucks, but out of the new trucks, which direction should I be looking? What would be the best for mileage and for the lowest cost of ownership?
Now, before we go there, and I will come back and give you some ideas, have you considered building a glider and putting a DPF on it?
Financing-wise, I wouldn't probably be able to.
Why not?
I've got a place that will finance me regardless of my credit score on new trucks. I've been buying used trucks from them. They don't carry those anymore, and now they just have new ones. But they don't carry gliders.
That alone kind of scares me. Why will they finance you on a new truck no matter what your credit score is?
They base it more on your business history. And I bought two trucks from them already. Which, actually, the first truck I bought from them is what tore down my credit score. It was kind of a lemon. I was one of them 40,000 in a year repair guys. Wasn't a good truck.
So
it was an EGR truck.
What, what kind of dealer is this? Are they like a third party leasing company?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, you know,
it's actually
the problem
structured
there,
as a lease with no buyout or anything when
right.
you make the last payment, the truck's yours.
Yeah, and I kind of knew that because those are typically the places. And here's the thing you have to know. If they are willing to finance people no matter what their credit score is, they've got to make up for that risk. I mean, credit score is a risk indicator. It's an indicator that there's a chance something's
right.
going to go wrong and you're not going to pay for this truck. And
right.
if they're willing to take that risk, they can only do it because on every deal they make far more than average, and
right.
they can eat
and
the
they
losses
they're making
when they...
They're getting about 160 on a new truck, which is, I figure, about $20,000 too much. But I'm not buying the truck to resell it. I'm buying it to make money.
But wait a minute. How can you say $20,000 too much and then say but and dismiss it? You know, why not buy a used glider and put a DPF on it? Can we get financed on it? Why not buy a $12,000 truck and put a DPF on it and put some money in it as you go? Cash flow the thing.
Where would I get that?
Where would you get what?
The used glider.
Well, Schneider's got a bunch
there.
Of them. They're, yeah, and,
Schneider.
And they're getting more and more common. I mean, because we started really heavily building gliders almost 10 years ago. I mean, even 10 years ago, Fitzgerald was doing several hundred a year, and so were other companies, not quite to that volume. But, you know, it's been a decade of a lot of people building gliders. So every year it gets easier and easier to find them on the used market. But it doesn't have to be a used glider. It could be a $10,000 pre-emission truck that you put some money into as you go. Hell, for $160,000, I can buy 10 trucks.
We can
right.
get you a DPF. Actually, we're working on some DPF, trying to select a supplier right now. We're going to have some meetings at the Louisville show with the two that we've got it narrowed down to. It's not cheap. There's some logging software or some hardware, actually, and software involved to keep California happy. And some of these may be as much as $20,000 to install to have something that's right on with what CARB wants from you guys. But, you know, that's still cheaper than, you know, being on the line for a new
right.
truck there.
Well, I mean, let's just
yep.
think about the numbers. On the high end, the DPF is $20,000. That's how much you're paying too much for the truck you're looking at.
Right.
That $20,000 is just... That's just they get to pocket it because you're too high of a risk. You're not buying anything you can hold in your hand for that $20,000.
Right.
And honestly, you know, if you are that high of a credit risk, you really shouldn't be spending $160,000 on a truck. It's kind of like the guy I talked to earlier that went through a $40,000 bad year. You've got to do something very, very low risk for a year or two to get yourself financially stable again.
Well, see, I am three or four years out from the financial instability that I did have that messed my credit.
Well,
I've been with
well,
a better carrier for 3.5 years. And
well, good. Let's keep doing
a better
that
truck.
I mean, that's the reason to get your credit back and get financially stable so you don't have to sign deals like this. This is just
right.
a bad deal.
That's
if you're happy with your current truck.
3 years getting my credit up, and it's raising slowly. But I do have a hit for a repo on a personal vehicle. It was either the car or my truck. Well, let them take the truck, and I don't have any income at all. So the car went away. And
absolutely. That was a good choice. And that's what I'm trying to help you do now is make a better choice. I think this is a horrible choice. And, John, I think you were about to ask him about his current truck, right?
Well, if you're happy with the truck that you've got currently and you're making some money with it and getting yourself out of the hole there, why not let's look into doing a DPF on it and getting it up to CARB standards for you. That would make a whole lot
That's
more sense.
That's an even better option.
Than going off the deep end on another truck. And if you buy a used truck, you know, there's the you know, you don't know what you're getting thing. You know, who knows what you'll walk into there.
Right.
So if you've got one that you're familiar with and you know the maintenance history of and you're happy with, if it's been helping you to get to the point where you are now, why not do a little more investing in that and make it capable of what you need it to do there?
What would a person be looking at to add an EGR and DPF back to it?
The upper end of that, I can't have a solid quote for you yet on that, but we're looking at around $20,000 high end with the monitor and computer and everything that it may need. And something, on the low end, maybe as low as 12 or 14. We'll see. Like I said, I'll have more info on that after Louisville.
Okay. That might be the better thing. Just keep this one.
You know, it really is. Because I'll tell you, not only is the $160,000 a lot of money no matter what, but you're not getting $160,000 worth of value. Because it's really a $135,000 truck, but it's also a lot of stress. And what if you get it and it's one of those problem trucks that does cost $40,000 in the first year or two? It's too much stress. Stick with what you're doing. Spend 20 if you have to, and buy yourself some time and get really financially stable, maybe another year or two. Hey, guys, we're all out of time. I've got to get out of here. Thanks for joining us, and we'll get you back here next week. Thanks again for helping out. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, thanks everybody. We're just doing an hour today. We're on the road and we need to get some miles behind us. So we'll see you back here tomorrow.